This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Hello, America. This is Ken Klukowski, guest hosting for Tony Perkins. It is Friday, August 26th in the year of our Lord, 2016. I'm standing in for the great Tony Perkins as he continues to help the people in Louisiana work through the challenges that they're dealing with in the incredible flood, the disaster there that has wiped out so many homes and has so many Americans. It's in true need. And I know that all the people in Louisiana are thankful for the great people from Samaritan's Purse who have come to their aid, the many volunteers who have come to assist them, and also that even the Republican presidential nominee, Donald J. Trump, and his running mate, Governor Mike Pence, were also there on the ground helping with relief supplies. So I'm your guest host for today. I am Senior Counsel and Director of Strategic Affairs with First Liberty Institute, the largest law firm in the United States exclusively dedicated to protecting religious liberty for all Americans. Check out what we're doing fighting for your rights there at firstliberty.org. Also, senior legal editor at Breitbart News Network, exposing the truth about the liberal left and telling you what's really going on in your country and your world. Make sure you check us out at Breitbart.com. But today I'm not speaking to you for either First Liberty or Breitbart, but as a husband, father, Christian, and citizen of the greatest country in the history of planet Earth, the United States of America. We're talking faith, freedom, and family today, and we want you to join us. So we're going to be taking your calls later on in the show. We'll be opening up the phone lines in the last half of the show, and we want you to sound off, helping to tell the people in this country's capital what they need to be doing and why they are not listening to you. This is your opportunity to sound off and inform our nation's leaders. We'll be opening up the phone lines later at 866-372-7234. Again, 866-372-7234. We've got a fantastic show lined up for you, and I want to start, given the subject matter that we're going to be addressing, by saying that Washington Watch, American Family Radio, Bot Radio, and all of our related affiliates do not endorse or oppose any candidate for president or federal office. Any political opinions or viewpoints expressed are solely those of your humble host or the guests or callers of Washington Watch and do not reflect the views of the organization. That said, we are going to dive right in, starting off with the really just incredible news that's coming out today. It's that's got a lot of people rankled because they think it is that it's the liberal left twisting and distorting and trying to demonize their political opponents by talking about the alt-right, a term that probably many of you had never heard before this week. It's short for alternative right. Many others of you might not have heard it before about 10 seconds ago on this broadcast, but it's how Hillary Clinton is trying to characterize the campaign of her opponent, Donald Trump, in the campaign management. We're going to be talking about alt-right, but before that, we're also going to be talking about the scandal that continues to unfold in a drip, drip, drip fashion. And Hillary Clinton has tried to fix that sink, and you know what? It just keeps on dripping. I guess that's what happens when you have years of trying to hide what you're doing from the public and engaging in all sort of unseemly activities that when you're running for president, stuff comes out. And the growing calls with just this week's revelations regarding some 14,000 undisclosed business emails, State Department business emails that Hillary Clinton had not turned over to investigators that now have been recovered by the FBI, and the growing calls in many of the corridors of power here in Washington, D.C., to say that it is time for a special prosecutor to be appointed to explore this. So to talk about both what a special counsel is and also to be talking about the alt-right, we have with us Mr. Mark Smith, a New York Times bestselling author, also an attorney in New York City, and a presidential scholar at King's College in New York City, a phenomenal institution. Mark is also a media surrogate for Donald J. Trump for president. He is the best-selling author of the official handbook of the vast right-wing conspiracy, definitely something that we're all talking about right now, and in the arguments that you need to defeat the loony left. Mark Smith, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Ken, thanks for having me on. Great to be on.
So glad that you could be with us and for allowing me to walk through, I think, such a detailed introduction because I really wanted to set the stage for our audience. Let's take those topics we were talking about in reverse order, and I would love to have your perspective on it. Tell us what is going on in the wake of these 14,000 additional State Department official business emails that have now been discovered. The talk going on for a special prosecutor. Hillary Clinton, of course, is saying, no, there's nothing here, nothing to see here. In fact, people talking about it, this is all vast right-wing conspiracy stuff. It's my understanding that you have a special perspective on that, and I'd like you to join to explain that to our guests.
Sure. Well, Ken, as I'm sure your listeners are well aware, as you are aware, you know, the FBI director came out, you know, about 6 weeks ago and indicated and basically walked through basically the elements of various federal crimes that may have been committed or could have potentially been committed by Hillary Clinton and, you know, the Clinton Foundation. Since then, it seems as if additional evidence continues to come out that there may be these connections, of course, between the donations made by donors to the Clinton Foundation and certain favors and access that appears to have been given to Hillary at the State Department, based on reports by, for example, the Associated Press. What's most interesting is that, you know, many people have probably called for a special prosecutor on the grounds that, you know, Barack Obama, who is the direct boss of the Department of Justice, he is actively and openly campaigning for Hillary Clinton to be the third Barack Obama term. And, you know, the Department of Justice works for Barack Obama, and the idea that the Department of Justice working for Barack Obama could be objective and honest and impartial in such a situation as these Clinton emails and the Clinton Foundation potential pay-for-play situation is, of course, not really, you know, it doesn't pass the smell test. So there's been many calls for the appointment of a special prosecutor, someone who does not have a conflict of interest because that person would not work for President Barack Obama. You know, what's interesting and the point that I've been making, Ken, and we talked about this earlier today a little bit, was it's quite interesting that if you go back in time to 1994, which was the first, right, that was the era of President Bill Clinton, he signs on July 4th, 1994, into law a reauthorization of what's known as the Independent Counsel Statute, which, of course, is the statute that allowed for the appointment of Ken Starr and all that happened there back in the days with Monica Lewinsky and Whitewater. When Bill Clinton signed into law in July 4th, 1994, the Independent Counsel Statute, he made statements along the lines of that having an independent counsel, having someone objective and neutral without the appearance of partiality to look at potential crimes and potential strange situations is the right way to handle it with American government, so there's no perception of, partiality, even if there is impartiality. And what's most interesting is that Bill Clinton called for that and used that language in 1994. It's interesting that I haven't heard the Clinton campaign reiterate the views that President Bill Clinton made, a little bit more than a decade ago.
Yeah, that's right. And Mark, it's what astounds me here is if I had to like write up a fictitious story, like if I was writing a novel about government corruption and when things get to the point of when a special counsel needs to be appointed under the law to investigate this, I couldn't come up with a narrative this strong. I mean, this is ridiculously beyond the threshold at which a special prosecutor is appropriate. I mean, this is in spades why this kind of legislation was passed, as you just said. I mean, you have someone who's not just someone in government, but you have someone who was the Secretary of State. I mean, the cabinet officer in charge of the senior department of the United States government, a principal advisor to the President of the United States, the architect of our foreign policy. And now we see that there are family connections to this foundation that has received billions of dollars, not millions, but billions of dollars with a B. And the spouse has received up to $700,000 for a single speech by an organization or an entity that had business pending before the U.S. State Department. And all appointing a special prosecutor means is, well, you know what? This looks fishy enough that someone who's independent should take a look at this and make sure that no laws were broken. I just think it's astounding to say that this doesn't at least warrant an official looking at by the government.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, if I were the president, I would want to have an objective person come in and look at the situation, because otherwise, to me, from a perception point of view, it does make Barack Obama and his Justice Department, it does make them look as if they have an axe to grind or they have a dog in the fight. Pick your metaphor. And if I were the Department of Justice, I'd say, look, I just want the law to be followed. It's my job at the Department of Justice to make sure that justice is followed and satisfied. And if there's a perception that I can't be fair, I would prefer for someone who can be fair, who perceived to be fair, would handle the situation. So it doesn't make me, you know, look as if I'm, I'm paying political gains. Because at the Department of Justice, you're not supposed to be political. You have a very important job in following the law and applying the law. And if I were the Department of Justice, I would prefer for it, frankly, for someone else to take a look at this, so no one came back at me to say, you know, you were just being partisan. You weren't making a good objective decision as a lawyer or as the head of the Department of Justice. It's almost like in the best interest of Barack Obama and the Department of Justice for them to appoint a special prosecutor to look into Clinton Foundation and the things that happened here. And again, it may turn out, who knows, that if, you know, Hillary Clinton's statement the other night that, hey, this just smoke, no fire, if it turns out it's true, great. But as of now, there's so many questions out there that I think Hillary Clinton needs to address these questions before she can talk about anything else in this campaign. Because step one is, before you can be the president, I would say, is you have to be someone that actually follows the law, that when you take the oath of office as president, you're swearing that you will uphold the law, follow the law, and execute the laws. And if you're not capable of doing it before you're the president, then one wonders what you'll be like as the president.
Yeah, that's right. And especially with this ultra politicized Department of Justice that we've had under President Barack Obama. We've only got 30 seconds left, Mark, so we don't have time to develop this alt-right thing. But I mean, tell us in a couple quick sentences, what's this alt-right accusation and why is it wrong? We've got 20 seconds. It's throwing you a fastball here.
Bottom line is that when you have an argument that you cannot defeat, it's classic fallacy to attack through ad hominem attack various people. And Hillary Clinton's trying to attack Donald Trump by wrongly painting him, with the viewpoints of people he has no association with. And that's what they're trying to articulate is this sort of...
Mark Smith, thanks for joining us. We're out of time. God bless.
Since September 11, 2001, the U.S. has lost 7,000 lives and $2 trillion in the battle against global jihad. What is needed is a strategy that will allow us to win. What are the best strategies to defeat this threat? And is there an end to this war in sight? I'm Jerry Boykin, the former commander of the Delta Force and executive vice president of the Family Research Council here in Washington. Join me along with Philip Haney, Dr. Sebastian Gorka, and Dr. Zudi Jasser as we discuss these very issues. That's at the Values Voters Summit, September 9th through 11th in Washington, D.C. Please visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information and to register, or call 1-877-4-VOTES. 1-877-372-2808. That's 1-877-372-2808.
This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your health care with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger. A group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty HealthShare.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org. healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
With a ministry opportunity, here's Steve Tiber.
8 Days of Hope 12 will be going to Black River, South Carolina. Last year in October, 25 inches of rain fell in the state, causing $22 billion of damage. And now you and I get a chance to go to South Carolina this fall and encourage people who feel like they've been forgotten. We have 70 homes out of the 250 homes that we're looking to work in that need brand new roofs. If you've ever done any roofing whatsoever, a couple roofs in your life, or maybe you've led a roofing crew or worked in construction, consider coming to 8 Days of Hope. We're looking for plumbers, carpenters, painters. Man, there's something for everybody. For more information, go to 8daysofhope.com. We hope to see you there.
Be the hands and feet of Jesus. Visit 8daysofhope.com. Please pray for this relief effort and for the families affected by this flood. And if you can't volunteer but would still like to help, donations are also needed. You can give and learn more at 8daysofhope.com.
Here on Washington Watch today. Moving now to our next guest, a man who needs no introduction. If you are a Texas conservative, Jonathan Sines is the president of Texas Values, an attorney. It's by all accounts not just an upstanding guy, but a leader for social conservative issues in the great Lone Star State, which saw a great victory this week, where a lawsuit with over a dozen states on it, but led by the state of Texas, filed in U.S. District Court for the Northern District of Texas, challenging Barack Obama's transgender directive directed against the nation's schools, any schools that accepts federal funding, not just public schools, saying that any such schools are in violation of Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. That's the law that that protects you against discrimination from your employer, and also Title IX, which Congress added in 1972, which guarantees that both men and women will have full funding and equal facilities for their respective sexes, which Barack Obama, through his executive action, managed to flip on its head and say that sex in Title VII and Title IX means just whatever gender you choose to identify with. Now, among other things, that means that because one of the new gender categories is gender fluid, that means you can change each day. That means that if a 14-year-old girl who is a high school freshman is taking a shower in the girls' shower room, a high school senior who might be 18 years old, so could be legally an adult, who happens to be a boy, could decide to identify that day as a girl and has the legal right to use the shower right next to that 14-year-old girl while she is showering. There was actually a kerfuffle out of Illinois where a school was accused of gender discrimination because it did not allow the transgender person to use the shower at the same time as people who are of the opposite biological sex. A bunch of states filed suit. And this week, a U.S. District Court judge ruled against the Obama administration. Great victory for Texas. And here to talk about it, we have Jonathan Sines. Welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thanks for having me. I love that introduction of my background. I'm going to have to bring you on the road with me.
I appreciate that. And again, like I said, it's for anyone who knows Texas politics, you're a man who needs no introduction. But I was happy to give an introduction to our broader national audience.
Well, and if they haven't, they can go to txvalues.org to hear more information. Really some big news. I mean, and people have to keep in mind that Monday was the first day of public school for almost every public school student in the state of Texas, and probably in large matter for students across the country. And this ruling was not just about Texas. This is a federal court injunction that applies specifically to 13 states. But as a matter of fact, the judge went even further and entered a nationwide injunction on this issue. And why? Because the Obama administration had been pushing for months, threatening to take federal funding away from public schools if they didn't allow boys into girls' bathrooms, shower rooms, and locker rooms. And it was interesting because the judge, in his ruling, said there were two reasons why the Obama administration was losing at this point on this issue. Number one, they violated the Administrative Procedures Act. They did not go through the notice and comment procedure at all, which is very common when you try to change an administrative procedure. I think this is a fundamental change in law, that even if it was just a regulatory change, it required notice and comment. They went completely beyond and around that.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Their interpretation of their change in interpretation was an attempted redefinition of the word sex. They're trying to breathe into Title IX in the word sex, gender identity, which never existed as far as a legal term anywhere close to 1972, and it certainly is not something that's recognized under Title IX now. So they tried to push that into this definition, and the court said that completely contradicts what Congress has said and legislative intent has said. It's been very clear that there's history and precedent that schools can have a boys' bathroom for just boys and a girls' bathroom for girls, and that it's based on biological and anatomical details and the biological sex of the actual student. And so,
well, because otherwise, Jonathan, you're defeating the whole purpose for Title IX. If you're saying, okay, we have to provide a girls' locker room, which is every bit as good for the girls as the one that the boys have, and we're going to give funding for the girls' sports just like the boys have, but, oh, by the way, any girl or boy can just call themselves the opposite and just walk in and use the opposite facility.
Yeah, and you know, we've had concerns about these issues because we've seen local elected officials in the state of Texas try to force these issues in the public square and even in the public schools. The Fort Worth Independent School District tried to push this issue, in large part relying on some of the stuff that Obama was doing and pushing, and it went way over the top. It violated parental rights. They were trying to withhold information from parents if their children were coming across these issues or expressing these issues at school. They were actively telling staff members to not tell parents and deceive them. And so there were some major issues. Not to mention, when
now that is astounding. Let's repeat that for emphasis.
Not something for them to be concerned about.
Well, yeah, and I think that's something that's been big news that I think a lot of people haven't gotten yet, and we'll repeat that. And that is that staff at these schools have been told, if there is a boy claiming to be a girl, so a transgender boy, or maybe you call it transgender girl, if there is a biological boy, it's in a traveling trip where your female daughter is, that the staff should not inform the parents of that schoolgirl that some of her sleeping quarters mates may in fact be biological boys.
Yeah, I mean, and it's being overlooked a lot because people do not want to come to terms with that there is a legitimate issue of privacy and safety that's at stake here. And there's a reason why Obama and these local elected officials didn't want the public involved. They had this information hidden. They tried to keep them out of the process and skirt the process and what's required under federal law and local law here in the state of Texas, because they know when parents start finding out about this, they're not going to be happy about it. That's why there are 23 states that are part of litigation going against this effort. And as you know, as an attorney, when you win at the preliminary injunction phase, that's because the judge has said you are likely to prevail on the merits. They've already seen enough to believe you're going to win, regardless of what happens next.
And so now the case, Jonathan, goes to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit. That correct?
Well, that's true. I haven't gotten any notice that the other side, that the federal government has appealed yet, but I would think it's clear that they would. I mean, they're going to try to do anything.
One would really think that they would want to. Jonathan, we're so glad that you could be with you. Folks, check out Texas Values. Jonathan, thanks for joining us, and God bless.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
Well, we got some good news out of home sales numbers. New home sales were up, and that was very good news because it was up considerably. We've got existing home sales down considerably. That was the bad news. The other piece of bad news this week that we received was 51-year low in home ownership. 51-year low in home ownership. We also got GDP numbers out. And it looks like GDP numbers are coming in. This is the second look, by the way. We still have one more. The last look we got was 1.2% for GDP growth. Second look, 1.1%. So 1.1% GDP, it's going to be a very difficult achievement to get GDP growth in and around the Obama normal of 2%. This could be a year, his last year, where we see GDP growth below 2%. So as if things couldn't get any worse as far as GDP growth goes, it looks like it certainly has the potential and will be doing that. The idea just that we've had 7 straight years of GDP growth at 2%, which is just horrible. It looks like we could even be below that. Part of this president's legacy will certainly be that. The president that had an inability to get any real growth in the economy, though they distort some of the numbers and try to put as much lipstick on this as they can, it is not working. And we are looking like we will continue to have poor GDP performance once again this year.
Experience Dan Celia in person. Find a faith, family, and finance town hall meeting or seminar near you at afafoundation.net.
And we're back, America. Ken Klukowski, guest hosting for Toya Perkins here at Washington Watch, just thanking my wonderful producer and his staff for the fantastic job that they do bringing this show together every day and in enabling me, your humble host, to be able to bring you the news that, again, the rest of the country isn't talking about. So a great shout out to the production team here for the incredible job that they do. Even during breaks, you'd be amazed at last minute things that come up and they just make it happen. And talking about what's going to happen now, we turn to our third and final guest of the show today. A great friend of this show and this ministry, and also a friend of mine, Chelsea Yeoman, is counsel and chief of staff at First Liberty Institute, the law firm where I also work, the largest law firm in the United States, exclusively dedicated to protecting religious liberty for all Americans. Check out, as I always tell you, what we're doing there, fighting for you, your rights, your family, your freedom, at firstliberty.org. And First Liberty had a fantastic victory just this week to advance and restore religious liberty in this country with a judge in Texas. And rather than steal her thunder, let me just say, Chelsea Yeoman, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you for having me, Ken. I'm so glad to be a guest on your show.
It's great to be able to talk to you in this venue. We're normally working on a lawsuit together, and instead, now we have the opportunity to share with the American people, 1 million of your fellow Americans around the country, about a great victory that we had this week with Texas Judge Matt. Go ahead and unpack that for our audience.
Yes, it has been a very good week here. We represent Judge Mack, who is a Justice of the Peace in Montgomery County, Texas. It's a little bit of a backstory, but I'll go ahead and share it with you guys. He ran his election because he wanted to serve the community and create a chaplaincy program that would involve calling chaplains to death scenes or emergency trauma scenes where there are often lots of witnesses and victims around who are distraught and some in the most terrible moment of their lives even. And he won the election and followed through with that promise and went ahead and created the chaplaincy program. It is an interfaith chaplaincy program, which means he sent an invite out to every single denomination of every faith in the community. There are Hindu elders in the program. There are rabbis in the program. And I believe there was even an atheist who wanted to join the program as well. So he, in this way, he has served his community at death scenes, which he acts as a coroner at. And then in an effort to honor these chaplains who are on call at all hours of the day and night, he invited chaplains one at a time to open up his court session with a brief invocation of their choosing. He also opens his court sessions with the pledges of allegiance and has that involved in his opening ceremony.
And for all that, there were some people that actually had a problem with this.
Aren't there always?
You know, when you have a policy that says, hey, I'm going to have chaplains around here, and some guy says, well, I'm an atheist, but I'd like to be one of your chaplains too. And he says, sure, everyone's welcome. I have no idea what you're going to pray or who you're going to pray to if you're an atheist. But that's, I mean, it just seems like that's about – that's like the polar opposite of discrimination. That is ultra inclusion, beyond, I think, even what any reasonable standard would have in terms of, hey, who would like to offer a prayer? Well, I don't believe in God, but I'd like to offer a prayer. Okay, you're welcome too. But evidently, you can't be inclusive enough for some people. So go ahead.
That's right. It's about as pluralistic as you can get in Montgomery County, Texas, which is a small rural county outside of Houston. to be that diverse of a program is a great way to serve his community and represent the community. And we know there have been Supreme Court decisions. Town of Greece is one of them that discussed the city council there did not have to have a representative of every faith, but the fact they invited all of the faiths was constitutional. And so this has actually been a fairly resolved area of the law.
So it's so that was the problem, and someone had complained about that. And tell us about the victory that came for Judge Mack and the rule of law and religious liberty this week in the great state of Texas.
We've had a few obstacles arise. The first was when the Freedom From Religion Foundation found a few people who wanted to complain, and they actually went after his judicial post, and they made a complaint with the Judicial Ethics Commission of Texas. So he underwent an intense investigation. The commissioners called him in. He had a hearing where he truly thought he would not be allowed to be a judge in the state anymore because of this program and because of the opening ceremony of his courtroom. So all of that was about a year ago, last October. And he won at all of those levels, and the commission still told him, though, even though we're not going to reprimand you, you should just discontinue the program. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick stepped in and sought an opinion from our Attorney General, Ken Paxton, who issued the opinion last week saying all of these practices are constitutional, and we had a resounding victory for a man who's really undergone intense scrutiny for over a year now.
Well, and I'll tell you, I mean, Lieutenant Governor Patrick and Attorney General Paxton are two wonderful friends of the First Amendment, wonderful friends for free speech and religious liberty in this country. I hope people from the other 49 states really look at those two phenomenal public servants, as well as Governor Greg Abbott. I mean, the state of Texas just has superstars right now as its state officials. And I think it's wonderful that they sought this, and even more wonderful that the rule of law prevailed for Judge Mack and for all Americans in that regard. Chelsea, thanks for being with us. Where can people get more information on this victory?
They can go to firstliberty.org and see everything they need to know, even the legal background. Some of the documents are online, so feel free to go search our website.
Firstliberty.org. Thanks, Chelsea. God bless.
Since I've led tours for many years to the Holy Land, Israel, many people ask me, what's your favorite place to go? I have two, really. The Garden Tomb and Calvary and the Sea of Galilee. Now, I like all the places we stop along the way in Israel, but those two places in particular are very special and meaningful. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We'll be going to all the places you've read about in the Bible since you were a child. It's going to be a very special tour of Israel, the Holy Land, March 9 through 17, 2017, we're taking a direct flight from New York to Tel Aviv. For all the information on this tour, just call us at 800-FAMILIES, option 5, and leave us your name and your address, and we'll send you a brochure. 800-FAMILIES, option 5, or visit the website twholyland.com.
The Decision America Tour with Franklin Graham.
I'm traveling to all 50 states to hold prayer rallies. We're asking Christians to vote for candidates that stand for biblical principles and biblical moral values and engage in your community by living and sharing your faith.
The Decision America Tour with Franklin Graham.
And I'm going to be sharing the gospel.
You'll find rally dates and locations, plus information on how you can be involved at DecisionAmericaTour.com.
Now is the time to take a stand.
Consider serving the Lord with Friendships. It's an opportunity to reach out to the needy around the world. They're now taking applications to volunteer, and they need help in the areas of mechanics, maritime, including deck, engine, and steward departments, food service, warehousing, and office. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
Hi, this is Dan Celia from Financial Issues. You know, the charitable gift annuity concept is more important today than probably ever. It is something that you have heard me talk about for many, many years. And right now, for now, the tax code is still allowing charitable organizations to establish a charitable gift annuity so that you can be guaranteed permanent income for the rest of your life. Don't waste any time. So many of you have IRAs, 401k money. Peel off a piece of that. Establish your charitable gift annuity so that you have a portion of permanent income that you know is never going to change for the rest of your life. Would you do it today? Call AFA Foundation, 800-326-4543. Extension 345. That's 800-326-4543. Extension 345.
And we're back, America, and we're opening up the phone lines. Time for you to sound off and tell the leaders here in Washington what they need to be doing, but that you know they are not. At 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. The news of the day, folks. We've been talking about special prosecutors. We've been talking about political corruption. The alt-right, again, vocab lesson for a lot of people this week, maybe even just during this show. And also talking about a wonderful court victory against Obama's transgender directive, and also another First Liberty win, also out of the great state of Texas, being represented by First Liberty Institute. And again, the info on that, you can get all that at firstliberty.org. And the phone lines are lighting up, so make sure that you join us at 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. As the phone lines are lighting up, before we go to that, I want to flesh out on one previous point, because we were having so much stuff with the special prosecutor, with attorney Mark Smith, that we didn't get to spend as much time as I wanted to on the alt-right, or again, alternative right. Just so you folks know what's going on here, to flesh that out, is that Hillary Clinton gave a speech, which Charles Krauthammer called a dud, and he's not even accused of being part of the alt-right, so I'm just going to agree with Dr. Krauthammer on that, saying that the Trump campaign is being embraced by the alt-right and being led by the alt-right. They say that that is a code phrase for radical right-wing stuff, like neo-Nazi-type stuff, skinhead-type stuff. They refer to it as a cloak for militant racism. And they're referring to Breitbart News as supposedly an outlet for that. Now, I have to say, as the senior legal editor of Breitbart News, I was shocked to find out that this was going on at my organization because, of course, knowing about 100 of the staff members there, many of whom, by the way, are black or other people of color, and including plenty of people who are observant Jews and all sorts of religious and ethnic ethnic groups that supposedly this alt-right is opposed to. It's astounding to find out that evidently we must be self-loathing, because it seems like a good number, maybe half the people there, are part of these categories that supposedly the alt-right is going after. So, kind of ironic there. In fact, if we had such an action-packed show lined up, if not, I was actually going to bring on one of my black co-workers from Breitbart or one of my Jewish co-workers so that we could all have a laugh about being called being part of a racist or anti-Semitic organization. By the way, the CEO of Breitbart News, Larry Solov, is himself Jewish. So it's, again, stunning to find out how people can say it, but I guess Hillary Clinton figures, if you can just shout that into the microphone, you're going to have a sycophantic media that's just going to repeat it. And if you lie enough about it, maybe you'll be able to fool some voters. Let's all consider that when we decide who we want to be the next commander-in-chief of the United States. A wonderful track record of honesty through Benghazi and the Clinton Foundation, and now calling Jewish-led organizations anti-Semitic. Have fun with that one. With that, we'll go ahead and open it up to you all, and we're going to start with Kevin from Arkansas. Kevin, you're on Washington Watch.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for interrupting my diatribe.
Well, I'm just concerned, though, about the VHA handbook at the VA that they have decided to go ahead and take out at least in our VA. The other VAs have rejected it to this point, but at the same time, I can read out the whole thing, but it's in the VHA handbook. There's a man, July 18th of, it says 2008 and 16, so I'm not sure what that means, but it was supposed to be this year, that they took out the Bible out of the VA chapel.
They took the Bibles? This is news to me. I actually haven't heard this. They out of your local VA facility, they've taken Bibles out of the chapel. My goodness. Okay, Kevin, I don't know what to say beyond saying that's outrageous, and we're going to have to check that out. Thanks for bringing that to our attention. And certainly, I mean, that kind of radical secularizing of America, not knowing the facts of the situation that you're describing, because, again, this is the first I'm hearing of it, but we've seen it in other aspects of the federal government. We saw that at Walter Reed Hospital under President Barack Obama. We've seen a radical secularizing of even modest expressions of faith. And the American people really need to decide on November 8 whether they are going to allow the complete purging of Christian and biblical influence from this civilization to continue. Thank you, Kevin, for bringing that to our attention. Turning to Chris in Tennessee. Chris, you're on Washington Watch.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. So I had a few things that I kind of wanted to ask you about. One was the transgender bathroom thing, but I did want to also sort of touch real quick on what you just said about the taking the Bible out of the American society.
Yes.
You're aware that the First Amendment says that Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion.
Correct? As someone who teaches constitutional law and practices constitutional law, including the Establishment Clause, before the Supreme Court of the United States, yes, I am familiar with what the First Amendment says.
Great. Okay, so I was wondering, what exactly is the big deal about the transgender bathroom thing? I was listening to your show earlier, and I had to get out of my car, and so I didn't quite catch it. But what's the reason why we're so concerned? Why you guys are so concerned?
Oh, let's go ahead and raise those in the order that you raise them. First of all, the Establishment Clause, when that was ratified in 1791, the Establishment Clause forbids two things. The government cannot officially take a position on theological matters. That is to say, Congress cannot pass a law saying that in communion, the bread and wine literally become the body and blood of Christ, whether or not it's the Roman Catholic doctrine of transubstantiation or the way Protestants look at it more as a memorial, that Congress cannot pass a law taking an official position on those doctrinal matters. The other thing that the Establishment Clause forbids is coercion, that no person can be coerced, cannot be compelled by the government to join a religion or participate in a religious exercise that violates their conscience. And that's it. Everything else is left to the democratic process. So when you're talking about the establishment of religion, that's all it takes in that regard. And now the Supreme Court itself, now I've been to the Supreme Court about 200 times. The Supreme Court starts each session with the marshal declaring, "May God save the United States in this honorable court." Do you see that as an Establishment Clause violation, Chris?
I personally don't really care. It doesn't bother me one way or the other.
You don't care, but you're still bringing it up on national radio?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that makes sense. Let's go ahead and move on to the transgender issue. The issue with transgender is that in Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, which Congress passed in 1964, and in Title IX, which are the amendments they added for education in 1972, the Congress forbids certain types of discrimination, such as by race, etc. And one of those is forbidding discrimination on the basis of sex. The issue here is that over the past few months, the Obama administration put out a series of directives saying that the term sex in those laws from the 1960s and 1970s refers to not your biological sex or your DNA or your chromosomes, your anatomical features. It instead refers to whatever gender you choose to identify with. Which, again, now would include, first of all, gender fluid, which means you can change from day to day. Or second, another one, the latest one, is part of a lawsuit now in California, the Zim versus Kerry case, is intersex. And that is someone who says, "I refuse to be identified as either a male or a female." Now, the reason that this is an issue, well, there's a number of reasons, but the one that was in this lawsuit is that the Obama administration said that any school that does not allow, for example, a biological boy to not just call himself a girl on any given day and use the toilet, to use the shower facilities at the same time as biological girls are doing it, or to join a girls' sports team and compete against biological girls, that if they do that, they are committing sex discrimination in violation of Title IX, and in the school system can be stripped of every federal dollar of support. And a lot of people just thought that that was, first of all, that it's not a correct reading of the law, and that second, if such a change were to be made, if it should be made, and many people would say it should not, but that if it, even if a change like that were to be made, it needs to be done by Congress through the democratic process, that Barack Obama cannot just strip away federal funds from schools for not agreeing with him on that agenda. So that was the issue there. I take it you don't agree with that.
Well, the I'm wondering what really the big deal is. Like, what is the concern? Like, okay, if a biological boy can go into a bathroom and say I'm a girl, is that something that you're concerned about? I mean,
I think a lot of parents, it's not just that I think a lot of parents, I mean, I do this show all the time and I'm in litigation with plenty of these people. There are millions of parents who are concerned about the idea of a 14 or 15 year old girl, their daughter, having to share a shower with a biological male standing right next to them who might be 17, 18 years old, could actually be a legal adult, with their 14 or 15-year-old girl while she is using the toilet or while she is showering naked. There are parents who don't want to have their daughter showering naked next to a person of the opposite sex. You don't you don't understand how some people could regard that as a big deal?
I don't see that being a problem. I think it's one of those things where you say, well, yeah, you know, if you open this door, then X and Y could happen. But I think that's slippery slope fallacy. I think you're talking about something, but you're not bringing up.
Wait, this isn't a slippery slope fallacy. This happened in a school in Illinois where they had a biological boy who said, "I identify as a girl," and so they set up a separate facility for him to shower in. And the Obama Education Department came after him and said it was sex discrimination that they did not let him use the shower with the other girls, the biological girls, at the same time they were using it. They said to make him use the same facility at a different time or to use a different facility. They said with that boy, this wasn't hypothetical. This really happened. They said, you let him go shower with those girls now or you're in violation of federal law.
Sure, I can understand that. I can understand one case happening out of however many schools there are in the United States.
You know what, Chris? For a lot of people, one is enough. And that was the first instance. Now we have lawsuits going on in 23 states out of 50 engaged in litigation against the U.S. government on this. Chris, thanks for calling. Appreciate you coming in and taking the fire. Obviously, I think you're dead wrong. Turning now to Clayton from Louisiana. Clayton, you're on Washington Watch.
Oh, brother, I am amazed. I am absolutely amazed. Anyway, my question is this. Okay, it's legal now. If you feel like you're a male, if you feel like you're a female today, you can go in the ladies' restroom. My question is, if you don't feel like you're a female, is it legal to go in the ladies' restroom? And the reason I say, I have never been able to get in touch with my feminine side. I don't know how you do that, but I'll say this. If I am somewhere with my wife or my daughter or my granddaughter, and they go in the ladies' restroom, and some guy goes in behind them, don't think for a second I'm not going to go in and protect my family members. So I just want to make sure it's legal for me to go in there, even though I don't feel like I'm a female.
Well, Clayton, I hear what you're saying, and it's Barack Obama says that is now legal. A federal judge in Texas disagreed and struck that down. Now this matter will go up on appeal, and I believe ultimately between these lawsuits going on, one in Texas, one in North Carolina, and one in the Great Plains, again, almost half the states in the nation involved in this litigation, I think this matter will quickly go before the U.S. Supreme Court, which means that whoever wins the presidency on November 8 will create the deciding vote through their appointment to the ninth seat on the U.S. Supreme Court, the one left vacant by the death of Justice Antonin Scalia. That's likely going to determine ultimately what the law is going to be on this issue. The way the law is being written, they would say that you're being a lawbreaker. Now, there's a lot of people who would say exactly what you said, and that is that I am going to protect my family members. Evidently, you disagree with our previous caller, Chris, that you do think it's a big deal if you see a full-grown man walk in behind your granddaughter into the restroom, and that you, as a family member watching over your family, are not about to let that happen. So, yeah, Clayton, they would say that you are the lawbreaker in that instance. And I think that just shows how twisted the legal interpretation on this issue has become and how the American people will decide on November 8 whether they're going to let it continue to completion or whether they're going to slam the door on this and restore some sanity to it. Clayton, thank you for joining us. Folks, that's all the time for callers that we have today. I appreciate all of my callers calling in and the wonderful guests that we've had today. We'll be back with you next week. In the meantime, again, if you want to check out what we're doing fighting for your religious liberty, make sure you check us out at firstliberty.org or get the real news of what's going on in this country checking out Breitbart News Network at Breitbart.com. I'm Ken Klukowski. God bless.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.